Folks, we'll call the meeting to order. Thank you all for taking some time for us on Friday afternoon. Potential acquisition of Northwest Airlines by Delta, I think in many people's estimation could be among the, if not the single most important or sizable economic event in Minnesota's history. And I don't think I'm overselling that. So it's a very important topic to the sorts of things that are before our committee, namely commerce and labor. Today, we have scheduled, and just to kind of give you an overview of what's planned, we have sort of a star-studded lineup today to talk about the impact that this could have on Minnesota, as well as the people of Minnesota, the traveling public, businesses, both directly and indirectly. But scheduled for today, we're going to start with a brief overview by, as we affectionately call him, Professor Pender, to kind of walk us through the last two decades of agreements that the state has entered into with Northwest Airlines. We will then turn to, we've got Miles Shaver, who is a professor at the University of Minnesota Carleton School of Management. Commissioner McElroy, of course, everyone knows from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And far from least, Mayor McGuire from the city of Eagan. Finally, we've got Ben Hurst here from Northwest Airlines. He's general counsel and senior vice president. And as I understand Mr. Hurst's involvement, he's literally been at the table since day one when the agreements were starting to be entered into back in the early 90s and has been at every table and in the negotiation since then. So he was sort of our first round draft choice with respect to the proceedings today. And I believe, Mr. Hurst, you were also at the table with respect to the merger discussions or acquisition discussions that have been. Okay, so we're. So that's kind of the folks that we have coming to hear from, and I will try to get you out of here at a reasonable hour this afternoon so folks can get on the road to home. I would express a little bit of disappointment. We've requested the CEO's presence from Northwest Airlines. They've not said no, but we have had a scheduling issue with respect to that. He's apparently spent a great deal of time in Washington, D.C., and we respect that, but more than he would like, according to Mr. Hurst. So we're hopeful yet to get Mr. Steenland here. I've been deeply disappointed with what we've heard from or failed to hear from Delta. If they're going to be our new neighbor, I would hope that they would be a little bit more responsive to our requests. So we finally got, after sending polite letters, none of them have been snotty or anything, but we've sent to them to ask for either their CEO or some representative. We finally heard back today they won't be here today, and they don't indicate that they necessarily ever will be here. And so I've taken a look at my frequent flyer miles, and if need be, I'll offer up my frequent flyer miles to Delta's CEO to get him here as well. But I'd appreciate it if Delta's in touch with you, tell him how much we'd like to have him here to find out what the future holds with regard to this acquisition. Representative Mahoney.
You know, we've tried to use subpoenas before on Wacoota Bridge. I mean, I'm willing to sign it.
Well, and hopefully, Representative Mahoney, it won't come to that. You're right. We did have that discussion. Unfortunately, with those for whom it was necessary to have that discussion, they immediately complied. We're not to that point yet, but we certainly know how to go about that. In any event, before we get underway, before I forget to do it, Representative Zellers moves the approval of the minutes from our last meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. With that, we'll turn our attention to the Northwest. Professor Pender, if you will give us a brief overview of where we've been and where we're at today.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Tom Pender. I'm with the Health Research Department, and I have a handout of my presentation that's available, and I'm going to be following that handout in case people want to follow along. I've been asked to give a brief 10-minute presentation on the background of the agreements between Northwest and the state and the Metropolitan Airports Commission. I don't claim to be an expert on this subject. I know there are many experts in the audience, And most of what I have learned about this or know about this, I learned within the last week. And I'm not going to be covering any complex legal issues here. I'm just going to be giving a basic introduction, sort of just in case there's some members who know as little as I knew about this a week ago. The history of this is as follows. In 1991, the legislature approved a financial assistance package for Northwest. And this had three elements. First, a $270 million loan to Northwest from the Metropolitan Airports Commission, the MAC. Loans from the state for construction of heavy maintenance facilities for aircraft in Duluth, and financing for an engine repair facility at the Chisholm-Hibbing Airport. In 1992, then, based on that legislation, the MAC issued $270 million in its general obligation bonds and used the money it got by selling those bonds to buy property and equipment from Northwest in a sale-leaseback arrangement. And that means that Northwest sold the property and equipment to the MAC, and the MAC then leased it back to Northwest. So Northwest was continuing to use it just as it had before, and was paying lease payments, which were calculated to match the payments that the MAC had to pay to its bondholders on the bond. The agreement between the MAC and Northwest on this transaction involved three what are called public policy covenants. And those are simply promises that Northwest made in the agreement that it would do certain things during the life of this loan. And those three things are as follows. First is what's called the corporate headquarters covenant, in which Northwest promised to keep its corporate headquarters in the Twin Cities metro area. Then there's what's called the hub covenant, in which Northwest promised to keep a hub at the Twin Cities airport. And there's a definition for what it means to keep a hub somewhere, and it's based on the percent of travelers who are on flights, are on trips that neither originate nor end in the Twin Cities. In other words, that's kind of what a hub is, that people use it to transfer from one aircraft to another to ultimately get somewhere. And then there's also a requirement based on the number of flights per day averaged over a year. And then there was a third covenant called the employment covenant, in which Northwest promised to maintain a certain level of employment, a certain number of employees in the Twin Cities and in Minnesota. So those are the three public policy covenants that were and are in this agreement. This was an agreement between the MAC and Northwest. The state was not a party to it, but the agreement did provide that the state would have the authority to enforce it if it chose to, on the same basis as if it were a party to the agreement. In 1992 to 1994, Northwest had continuing financial problems, and as a result, they didn't feel able to proceed with the construction of the new facilities in Duluth and Chisholm-Hibbing. And in 1994, these projects were downsized. And the result was that in 1995, state bond funding was provided for a repair facility in Duluth that was substantially less in scope than what had been contemplated in the original legislation in 1991. And also, financing was provided by the IRRB, the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board, for a reservation center in Chisholm instead of for the engine aircraft repair facility that had been originally planned. Now we reach the period of 2005 to 2007, In 2005, Northwest entered a Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And for those of you who don't know what a Chapter 11 bankruptcy is, it's an opportunity for a business to kind of get some breathing room and try to reorganize, try to refinance debt, sell off assets, do whatever seems to be a good idea for them in order to be able to try to continue their business instead of going into liquidation. And if that fails, they would go into a Chapter 7 bankruptcy proceeding, which is a liquidation where their assets are sold off and distributed to the creditors. So, and in a Chapter 11 bankruptcy, there's often negotiations with creditors, and things get changed. And as part of what went on in the Chapter 11 bankruptcy, first of all, the remaining debt on the Chisholm facility was repaid. There was only $1 million owing on it at that time, and it had been several million dollars more, but that debt had been forgiven based on Northwest compliance with keeping certain employment levels in Chisholm. Also, the remaining debt on the Duluth facility was repaid by Northwest during that Chapter 11 proceeding. And what that means is that there's no longer any debt to the state as part of this arrangement. The only remaining debt is to the MAC. And as far as that loan, the payments continued as scheduled on the loan from the MAC. And remember, those payments then were needed by the MAC to make the interest payments to its bondholders. But the lease agreement with the airport was, and their overall arrangement was renegotiated to include rent reductions for Northwest, and also revenue sharing from concessions. And that means something like this: if there are rental car agencies operating at the airport, and they are required to make payments to the airport or to the MAC for that purpose, Northwest, under this agreement, gets a share of those revenue sharing from concessions. And those two, the rent reduction and the revenue sharing from concessions, are conditioned in the agreement that was entered into, conditioned upon continued compliance with the headquarters and the hub requirements. So in other words, now, as a result of this, there are these two additional factors tied to headquarters and hub covenants, and those covenants were the wording on them was different from the original agreement to some extent. So at the present time, there's now about $45 million still owing on the loan from the MAC to Northwest, and that's basically the current status of things as Northwest came out of the bankruptcy proceeding. And Northwest continues to make payments, the payments required to be paid to the MAC to allow the MAC to pay off its bondholders. And then in 2008, of course, we have the announcement of the merger agreement between Delta and Northwest, carried out through a purchase of Northwest stock. And merger agreement can't be completed until the U.S. Justice Department looks it over for antitrust violations and approves it. And so we'll learn more about the effect of this merger on the public policy covenants over time. And so that's my brief introduction to the history of these agreements.
Fender, thank you. We appreciate the overview. As the members of the committee know, we sometimes throw Mr. Fender into all sorts of hot water on topics that he may or may not know everything about, but he always manages to figure out exactly what's going on and give us a reasonable overview. Are there questions? Obviously, Mr. Fender will be with us at the table, but are there questions that are burning in members' minds? Otherwise, we'll go to the testimony and All right, I don't. Yeah, Representative Mahoney.
I actually have a couple of questions on the 1992. The MAC issued the $270 million in general obligation bonds. How long were those bonds for? And with the $245 million still owed, and the renegotiation of that, does the years change?
Senator?
I don't know enough about that to give a definitive answer. I think that those bonds, or some of them, have been refinanced a few times, and I don't remember the original term of them. I think I knew it a few days ago, but it's one of those facts I've forgotten. And I think that as far as the 240 or so owing, it seemed to me to be a lot to be owing on still on a $270 million loan that was made, quite a few years ago. But I think it's like paying down the mortgage on your house. It's the first years you're paying almost all interest, and gradually you start to perceive a reduction in the principal. But I really don't know enough to answer your question.
And Representative Mahoney, I was going to say, we also have the Metropolitan Airports Commission here. They're actually going to formally testify on Tuesday, and I failed to mention that in my overview. We've got several more folks that are going to come for Tuesday's hearing, including representatives of the folks that are employed at Northwest, the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and a fellow by the name of Terry Tripler, who is reasonably well known in the industry as well, with his observation. With that, why don't we, unless you have any other questions right now, but I'm sure that, yes, Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one question on the Northwest must maintain a specific level of employment. Do we know the number, how much employment there was supposed to be kept here, or there is fractionally here now?
Okay.
Is there a number?
Mr. Pender, do you have that? I know it roughly off the top of my head is originally with 17,332 jobs. Is that rough? And currently it's in the neighborhood of about 11,000 jobs. So it's below the amount that was guaranteed, but it was subject to the changes in business conditions, which have been changing in the airline industry for some time now. So right now I believe, I assume somebody will leap out of their chair and tell me if I'm wrong, but it's in the neighborhood of around 11,500 jobs.
What was the original number?
Originally what was agreed to was over 17,000 jobs.
Thank you.
Are there other questions right now, Representative DeForest?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And as long as we have Mr. Pender available, and I know we don't want to get too deep into the weeds on specific aspects of the agreement between MAC and Northwest, but Mr. Pender, having not read those agreements myself, line and verse, I'm curious with respect to damages. Is there anything in there with respect to perhaps liquidated damages or choice of law, choice of venue questions? I said, Mr. Chairman, I acknowledge maybe this is getting too deep in details for today's purposes, but I'm wondering in general, Mr. Pender, are there such, or is the agreement silent with respect to that? Because I know one of the issues we're looking at here, and I know, Mr. Chairman, you had referenced it in a press release here, if we believe the agreements are breached, what course of action is available to the MAC and the legislature who's empowered to enforce the agreements?
Thank you, Representative DeForest. And actually, I know that we're going to take up the bills. Representative Hornstein has a bill, and I have a bill that we will take up on Tuesday. So when I asked Mr. Berender to prepare for today, I asked him to give us an overview of what's transpired since the original discussion. And I would expect on Tuesday to ask him to be better prepared with respect to damages. Now, that said, he may well be able to voice something today.
You know what, Mr. Chairman, I won't put Mr. Pender on the spot then today. I will withdraw my question then and look forward to the discussion on Tuesday.
Very well. Are there other questions at this point for Mr. Pender? All right. With that, folks, I always go to mayors first. You know, we start with the highest-ranking officers, and then we work. So Mayor McGuire from Eagan. Actually, I suppose Professor Shaver would probably be highest, but we'll still go with the mayor. Average citizens here in Minnesota are top of our list. And that's Commissioner McElroy, where are you? You're actually lowest on the list then, because you hold the highest. But we appreciate your patience. When you were a mayor, Commissioner McElroy, then you would have been first on the list. But
I'm
not an old friend. Mayor McGuire from Eagan, welcome to the committee.
Derek and committee, thank you for having me. I just want to start for the record and thinking your notes and for your media staff in terms of their CGI graphics. The proper spelling of my name, Cherak, is actually on the copy of my testimony they gave you. It's Clark, it's spelled M-A-G-U-I-R-E. So for the record, just want to make that correction. I also, on the way in, was reminded from a friend of mine that I best not lie to this committee and suggest that I will try to be brief. The good news, however, is that I am scripted, and I have also been warned not to go too far off of that script.
Fair enough.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as the mayor of Eagan and the home of Northwest Airlines World Headquarters, I want to thank you for requesting the city's perspective on the proposed merger. You had asked about local impact on the Eagan area. According to the latest estimates, Northwest Airlines has nearly 2,300 employees working at three different facilities in our city, plus the many airline pilots, flight attendants, gate agents, mechanics, and others who live in our community. There are also many retailers, suppliers, restaurants, and hotels that may be affected by this transaction. From a property tax standpoint, Northwest Airlines is less than 1% of Eagan's total tax capacity. And while our Chamber of Commerce to date has received reports indicating only modest impact for any merger, select entities could indeed feel significant impact depending on how the merger unfolds. For instance, one hotel has some 22,000 room nights attributable to Northwest Airlines every year. Another reports 20% of its business is connected with Northwest Airlines. So while we take no formal position on the Delta acquisition, it goes without saying that much is at stake for Minnesota and those who live or work in my community of Eagan. Respectfully, I believe our task must be focused on one thing, and one thing alone: how we preserve jobs and how we do that in the most constructive manner for the state and for the region. If we roll up our sleeves and think, I would argue creatively, I believe that there is a strategic opportunity to grow airline jobs in Minnesota by seeking agreement to establish a different type of headquarters here in Minnesota. Eagan's success in attracting major employers like Blue Cross, Thomson Reuters, Northwest Airlines, Lockheed Martin, Wells Fargo Mortgage, Ecolabs Research and Development, and many more, is not because of offering financial incentives. It has much more to do with emphasizing our natural advantages in terms of location, workforce, infrastructure, and low city taxes. It also comes from understanding business, recognizing that companies can and will make their own business decisions about markets, market strategy, services to customers, profitability, and return on shareholder investment. Those are things we in Eagan have very little to say about. Others will speak to you, I am sure, about how critical it is to maintain Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport as a major hub and a point of departure, especially for Minnesota's other major employers trying to grow and maintain their presence here in our state. We agree, and we believe that the airline does as well. That's why they concluded that a merger was in their mutual best interest. What is not being talked about, what is worth fighting for, is the quality of the talent pool that Northwest Airlines has assembled in Eagan. We understand the focus on the hub and the headquarters, but there are two other vital locations: the 27,000 square foot flight training center, known as the Northwest Aerospace Training Corporation, and the 335,000 square foot data center, known as Building J. Other than the executive officers and the most senior pilots and mechanics, these technological positions are the real high-paying jobs in the area, averaging between $70,000 and $80,000 a year. That supports our schools, pays for our mortgages, purchases from our area businesses, and contributes to our local tax base. I suggest to you that it is precisely these jobs that form the basis of a compromise and a win-win proposition if there is a Delta merger. It appears from what I have read that Delta is getting the name and the corporate headquarters. But we must ask ourselves, what about Minnesota? How about Minnesota as the technology headline, as a technology headquarters for a new global airline? It makes strategic sense for everyone. While Delta has for several years been searching for the right formula for its technological workforce, and in the latest evolution currently has spun those jobs out to a subsidiary, Northwest Airlines' homegrown workforce in Minnesota has pioneered the technology behind self-serving check-in, automatic notification of flight information to mobile PDA devices, e-ticket sales, and even was the first airline to allow pet owners electronic purchasing options for transit. Its flight training instructors are gaining many of the world's pilots are training many of the world's pilots on A320s and A330 aircraft, and soon we'll have a new B787 simulator as well. By designating Minnesota as a technological and training headquarters, it would provide a basis for complying with the spirit of the letter of the state's covenants with Northwest Airlines, requiring the airline to maintain a headquarters here. You know when Thompson West Corporation purchased West Publishing in 1995, the doomsayers predicted the demise of the local business and the end of the law book publishing as content went online. Today, 52 million law books are still published. With the recent Reuters acquisition, Thompson continues to grow and expand. In fact, since the West Publishing days, they have added 3,000 jobs in Minnesota, many of them technology-related, and they are today Eagan, Minnesota's number one employer. My point is, good things can happen again if we work together to recognize businesses' realities, local strengths, and present opportunities. There is a good business case to be made for Minnesota and for Eagan to be the location of choice for many jobs. We seek very hard to be guided more by the needs of our constituents than any political agenda. It makes business sense to maintain these technology and training jobs in Minnesota. While it's undeniable we also stand to lose some jobs, I'm proposing we not stand on the Capitol steps and play victim or throw money at the problem, but instead that we have confidence in Minnesota and compete. Eagan, this region, and Minnesota have been great assets to Northwest Airlines. I am confident we can demonstrate a solid value to a new Delta Airlines. In addition, if we can help the airline see the good business case for headquartering technology jobs here, we will help position Minnesota for future job growth as well. Mr. Chair, I thank you and the committee for the opportunity to talk with you today. As the airline industry struggles to survive and thrive, Eagan is pleased to help. We appreciate your time in listening. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and we appreciate the step up, the can-do, and positive attitude. That's what mayors are all about. It's kind of nice to hear from mayors first, too, with that sort of perspective. Are there questions for Mayor McGuire at this point? Representative Dabney.
Dabney, nice.
Who are you again? Did you just walk in?
Thank you, Mr.
Whoever you are.
Mayor McGuire, I read your comments before you spoke and was interested in the strategic approach that you suggest. It's somewhat complementary to the arguments that Thompson West made for its TIF proposal that it made through last year's tax bill. Later vetoed. How do we do what you're proposing as a state? How do we hold on to those tech jobs and nurture them, whether it's in Eagan or having an impact, hopefully, at least around the metro, if not elsewhere in the state?
Mayor McGuire.
Chair Atkin, Representative Dabney, thank you for the question. I want to be clear, there's a notable distinction between the Thompson West proposal and what I'm proposing here. In the city of Eagan, there are no incentives that we can put on the table to try to maintain businesses, nor as a practice do we try to seek them. I believe that in making this proposal, there is common ground between Minnesota and the airlines, and that as opposed to, as I suggested, throwing money at the problem, we instead work with the industry. I believe that the data center in Eagan is tops in the airline industry. And as a proud mayor, Mr. Chair, I would suggest I will put that data center up against any data center in any state in this country, including Atlanta, Georgia, and that we work with Delta and Northwest to encourage them to see the value and the asset that that can be without having to offer additional public subsidies.
Representative Dan?
Thank you. Interesting answer, Mr. Mayor. I'll just make one observation that may or may not resonate with the Northwest Delta merger, but you referred to Thompson's acquisition of Reuters. I'm told by folks who follow that more closely that if you read the newspapers here, it's Thompson's acquisition of Reuters. If you follow the British press, it's Reuters' acquisition of Thompson. At least with the Northwest Delta, we're clear who's doing what to whom. Thank you.
Representative Dabney. We are joined by a couple of guest stars today here on our committee. We have Representative Mason, Representative Medore, who have obviously some, or will certain represent people that will certainly have impact. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. And on behalf of the community of Eagan, I do want to tell you how much I appreciate you having this meeting today. I also have the privilege of serving on the Eagan Council during, and it was on the same day when Thompson purchased West and also when Cray Research left. And I cannot tell you the pressure and stress that came on that day, but we did.
So do you have something to do with this, Representative Mason? Is that what you're telling me?
I hadn't thought
wherever
about
it you go,
perspective
you
before. But the community did weather those changes. What I did want to ask Mayor McGuire is, when you're talking about the technology format for Northwest at headquartering here, you might want to give a little background about why you think that's important and why the city can do that.
Mayor McGuire. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mason, for the question and for your leadership, both on the council, on the Thompson West acquisition, and today. I'm sure that the community and the state will be well served by your efforts on both counts. Representative Mason, one of the things that I think it's important to talk about is the work that you have done in authoring what is referred to as the gig bill on occasion, and the notion of looking at the statewide technological infrastructure and high-speed infrastructure around the state. And that bill was just recently signed, I believe, at Thomson Reuters. Last week, and I congratulate you on that bill. It's an important bill because it does for the state what we have been trying to do in Eagan, and that is focus on the value of technological infrastructure and look at the importance of that infrastructure in the same tone of importance that we have for our transportation system and our roads and our water system. Technology is increasingly critical to our ability to compete in the region, in the country, and around the world. We in Eagan recognize that and have for a year and a half been working with a technology work task force to assess our own local technology infrastructure and work towards higher speeds that make us competitive with the rest of the world. We have been fortunate to have investments from the private sector and companies like Northwest Airlines and Thompson West and others that not only utilize technology but help us better vision our community for how we can make that use more effective and more attractive so that we make Eagan, Minnesota and the state of Minnesota a state and a community of choice. And we plan to certainly continue to move forward with that regardless of how the statewide plan goes, but we are pleased and very hopeful that the statewide plan will also help us in that effort. But I thank you for the question, Representative Mason and Chair Atkins.
Are there any other questions for the mayor at this point? In other words, Mr. Mayor, are you able to stay for a little while this afternoon?
I am. I'm able to stay for a little bit. I believe my ride is over here, but I'm sure I can probably convince him to stick around.
Well, when your ride needs to leave, then you got other, unless you're going to bike.
I believe he may at some point have some family to get home to.
All right.
I certainly wouldn't want to stand in the
way. Well, we appreciate your comments this afternoon very much.
I thank the chair and thank you, committee.
Thank you. Dr. Shaver is with the Carlson School and is in a position, we hope, that he can provide us with a little bit of an overview of the sort of impact that this may have on the region. We appreciate we're sort of working from the epicenter in the city of Eagan out a little bit broader to talk about the sort of impact that this may have on Minnesota and the region. Professor Shaver, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, members. Let me just quickly introduce myself. I'm Miles Shaver. I'm professor, and I'm also the department chair of the Strategic Management and Organization Department at the Carlson School at the University of Minnesota.
And thank you for coming. First off, if you have general comments, I know you've been thinking about this. We've, in fact, kind of exchanged some information. But if you have some general comments about what sort of impact you believe this will have on Minnesota, maybe working from Eagan on out for the rest of us. I'm in Inver Grove, so what the mayor just said about Eagan is going to have the same sort of impact on my folks, on Representative Mason, Representative Medora, but there's folks here from all over the metro, all over Minnesota for that matter. And if you can talk about the sort of impact that you think this acquisition by Delta of Northwest may have, we appreciate that.
Let me prompt it by just giving a couple thoughts first, and then I'm happy to answer any sort of questions on my perspective. And I think that there, as the discussion has gone, and I think it makes sense, that there's really two issues that we want to think about when we think about the impact of Minnesota. One is the issue of the hub, and the other is the issue of headquarters. And I think that we want to those affect people differently, and in my own opinion, I think there are very different impacts of this acquisition on both of those. So the impact of the hub itself, this is going to be the impact when it comes to jobs and that on the frontline people. These are the people who work at the airport. These are the people who are going to fly the aircraft, going to be flight attendants on the aircraft. That's going to affect you and I as consumers. It's going to affect the businesses in the Minnesota community beyond Northwest Airlines as they look for transportation and to engage the rest of the world with what we have to offer from Minnesota. That's what we want to think about when we think about the hub. When we want to think about the headquarters, who we want to think about is really twofold. First of all, there are the direct employees who are in the headquarters. Certainly this will have an impact on them, everything that we've heard. And then also potentially, as the mayor just mentioned, on the community of Eagan and the surrounding. So my own sense is the greatest impact on Minnesota is going to be with respect to those headquarters. There's every reason, it's been said, and there's every reason to believe there will be a substantial presence of that headquarters moved out of Eagan. It's been clear since Delta engaged in these discussions that they would keep the headquarters in Atlanta. There's every reason to expect that. There may be, and this is for the new airline to comment on what type of ancillary or other services stay in Eagan, but it makes sense to keep a lot of the headquarters function with the rest of the headquarters because that's where everybody else is rather than in a different part of the country. So that's really where the majority of effort is. And with respect to the committee and their thinking of this, what I'd encourage is when we think about this is for the impact on Minnesota, that when we talk about the headquarters, we don't necessarily talk about job counts, we talk about payroll. And this is the comment I think that the mayor just made, is that the jobs and when it comes to the tax base may be very different depending on who's moving or which jobs are moving out, and we want to give some consideration for that. So with respect to the state of to the employees there, with respect to the state and the tax roll, with respect to the city, this will hurt. And I think that makes sense. That's been said. That's the bottom line. From my own perspective, and again, this is based on what I hear, based on what I would think about something like this type of acquisition, personally, I don't expect that we will see major changes in the hub. it's true that the company has mentioned that, but I think that there's a couple other issues with respect to that that makes us think that we won't necessarily see a whole lot of major changes. First of all, we want to get, it's important to realize that, you know, all of us, the flying public in Minnesota, know we get to fly nonstop to lots of places, and we don't have really cheap airfares, quite frankly. Reason we don't have cheap airfares is there's the ability to push on those costs. Again, to the public, these are routes which they'll make more money on than they would when you have these super cheap airfares. There's every reason to believe they would have no incentive to change that. I think we'll see more of the same when it comes to that. The other thing to keep in mind with respect to the hub is, you know, we are, and I think I looked at the data, I believe we are the 16th biggest metro area in the country right now, and from my line of business, we are disproportionately a headquarters and a business center versus a lot of other places. There's a lot of business activity that happens here. There's a lot of demand for those flights. That isn't going to change. So our colleagues around the state that work at companies like 3M or United Health or Best Buy, they're still or Medtronic, they're still going to be flying around the country, and they're going to demand certain types of service. And there's every reason to believe, again, that having the hub here and this choice that we have of we have frequent flights, we can keep it all our frequent flyer miles on the same, it keeps us on Northwest, and we're encouraged to do that. And there's reasons to think that that may well continue to happen. I have to admit, so ideas of the hub disappearing, I'm skeptical about when I hear that. What I've heard about the fact that the hub will actually grow and this will be a fantastic thing, I'm skeptical about that also. Quite frankly, I'm going to expect business as usual. It would be my expectation.
Are there questions? I don't mean to interrupt.
I'm happy to.
Are there questions for you prefer Professor or Dr. Shaver? Mr. Shaver? Miles?
Yeah.
Whatever you...
As they say, just don't call me late for dinner, right?
Are there questions for Professor Shaver? Representative DeForest and Representative Burns.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Professor, there are two aspects, as I see it, to what might happen to the hub or to the headquarters, but especially the hub. There can be changes brought by market forces, right? Gaining economies of scale, for example, which is one of the reasons why you have a merger, gaining efficiencies and like. But also, despite the fact that airlines have become deregulated, so to speak, it's still a heavily regulated industry. And when you make comments about, for example, generally you would expect business as usual at the airport, are you speaking from an economic perspective? Or is it possible that regulatory changes could keep business as usual or change business as usual? For example, I read in the newspaper that it is possible under this merger that the new airline may be forced to reduce its gate presence at the airport as a condition of gaining merger approval. And so I was just curious if you could draw a line for me broadly between changes brought by market forces and changes potentially brought by regulatory action.
My expectations are really based only on economic forces, and regulatory forces are too hard to predict. Quite frankly, though, if you want my prediction, does this go through antitrust approval? Absolutely.
Representative Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Professor, as a committee, we're certainly looking at the immediate issues and how they affect headquarters, how they affect the hub, how they affect jobs, and certainly convenience to Minnesotans in using our airport. But one of the things I think we also want to be careful to do is look two steps down the road. Do you have any insight you can offer us as to what happens 2 to 5 years from now within the industry? And where this industry, which has been extremely dynamic since deregulation, where we will be and what sort of key factors we should take into consideration now in looking at the future of this industry. Dr. Shaver?
Yeah. So, as everybody in the industry will say, and I think we all can relate to it as we drive by the gas station every day on the way to work, is the key issue facing this industry right now are energy prices. And as energy prices go, so is very much this industry. And so that's one thing that we want to keep in the back of our mind, is that there are certainly forces outside the companies themselves, and they're all going to react to that. Having said that, though, you know, to the extent that, you know, I've been interviewed in the media, and my opinion is very public, is if we look 2 to 5 years down the road, my own sense is this acquisition is not going to solve the big problems for either of these companies. And so the issue there is, the number one issue is oil prices. Putting these two airlines together is not going to lower the price of oil. That's very clear. The second biggest component of cost or the issue of profitability in airlines are labor costs. We have, argued by the airlines themselves, a marginal, given their total labor costs, potentially a marginal reduction. Again, it's going to be very focused in a certain area. So we're still going to have the continuing issues with respect to the airline industry going forward, in my opinion. So to go back to the comment that Representative Littlefort had mentioned, did I get it right? Previously, you know, there, in my assessment of this acquisition, to keep in mind is that there are two ways in which they're looking for benefits. One is very much this notion of cost reduction, and this is the notion of combining the headquarters, potential, and they've argued to potentially more efficiently use the IT investments. The other, and that I believe is on, they've predicted on the $300 to $400 million cost range going forward. Where's that other, or the rest of the $1 billion in predicted benefit of this? This all comes from the demand side that they've argued. The idea that we're putting together complementary networks. Those are sometimes easy to talk about, in general, often very hard to realize, in my experience in studying mergers over the last decade or so.
Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that most of us are pretty much concerned about the employment with Northwest. And I'd like you to tell us a little bit of perspective as far as the hub jobs and the headquarters jobs, as far as seniority, how does that play out, and also with the lease agreements with Northwest as far as their buildings are concerned, and how does that play out as far as dollar-wise, if they are to cut jobs, and what jobs do you think that will be cut as far as baggage carriers in that hub area, and then the headquarter area? What type of jobs do you think would be?
And that, Shaver, just within your expertise, yeah. Obviously, I realize that this is right. One of those areas that can go wide and far. But I think particularly to them, the point of the quality that you talked payroll, I think what we've heard is just the quality of the jobs, the pay and income that's related to the various headquarter jobs versus the frontline jobs that you discussed.
Right. So the way that I think about it is when we talk about the jobs at the airport or the hub jobs, those are really going to be a function of how much air traffic is coming through here. And, you know, look, in the industry right now, with prices up, demand has been down. Whether or not this acquisition happens, there's probably a reduction happening there. I think it's just the reality in the airline industry, and we've seen several of the major airlines announce proactive job cuts that way. The other, so that when we talk about the frontline jobs of issues of baggage handlers or that, that's really going to be an issue of how much air traffic there is coming through the airport. As I mentioned, I don't expect that to change. I don't expect that to be different in the acquired company or materially different than if the company isn't acquired. But keep in mind, I think that the general forces in the economy are going to be affecting that now. With respect to the headquarters jobs, every indication is we're not going to have an executive suite there anymore. And all the back office jobs, potentially in things like accounting, finance, potentially marketing, How does IT fit in here? I think, as the mayor mentioned, you know, those are the type of activities that I think that we would be likely to see.
Thank you, Beth. Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Shaver, I was wondering if you could give me a little bit of information, kind of dovetailing off of Representative De La Forest's question about regulatory concerns. In your experience, when you talked about, in my experience of mergers, right. that phrase that you had, how long does it typically take for companies to merge, to go through the regulatory process and so on?
No, I think as we have heard from both of the airlines, they're thinking on the order of 8 to 9 months. We will go through the regulatory process in that period of time. I would be surprised if we don't fall within that time period.
Representative Madore.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and to Mr. Shaffer. I'm wondering if you can tell me about the absorption of those jobs here in our metropolitan area, headquarter level jobs. I'm imagining that there will probably be a lot of our jobs that won't go over to the Atlanta facility, so we're looking at very high-end paying jobs. Do we have the potential here, the way our metropolitan workforce has been falling the last two, 3 years, to be able to absorb those high-level jobs at that pay rate and, frankly, with that same benefit set?
Thank you, Dr. Chair.
And so I'll comment and say, let me give you my speculation here rather than anything that's ground in fact or figures that I've seen. I think our ability to absorb those types of jobs is quite decent and relatively high and better than potentially a lot of other places. You know, it's the thing that comes up when I deal with executive education students or others who come into the Twin Cities. People are absolutely astonished at what level of headquarters activity we have here and major divisions. And so there are a lot of positions like that around the metro right now. So it's not like this is the only game in town and everybody would have to leave.
Thank you. Are there other questions for Dr. Shaver at this point? Representative Coon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. From what you said, Professor Shaver, about you think that the bigger deal will probably be the headquarters moving or leaving and will still maintain the hub activity. Could you comment a little bit about hubs around the country, where there are hubs with a headquarters there versus hubs without? And I know Northwest has several hubs and many airlines do, and how that impacts the relationship with the community as well as the business interests there, and just give us a little sense of what that might mean.
Absolutely. So I went to grad school in Michigan, and Detroit's another huge Northwest hub, and any of you who've flown through that knows that Northwest does a lot of business in Detroit. And so they've done, you know, the Detroit Metropolitan Airport has done very well, even though the headquarters wasn't there. And keeping in mind, of course, that Republic Airlines was headquartered there when they were still a separate entity before being acquired by Northwest Airlines. So headquarters and hubs don't necessarily have to go hand in hand for that reason. That would be my sense.
Anyone else with questions? Well, Representative, you again? Didn't you get the message when I forgot your name earlier? Representative Devney.
I am nothing but if not persistent, Mr. Chair. Dr. Shaffer, I was struck by your reference a minute or two ago about Northwest not being the only game in town, and that the diversity of business activity here is a protection for us in terms of the impact. But I'm thinking back to the impact on the airline industry and the airport. Would it be different had the MAC more successfully pursued a strategy of a more diverse airline presence there, where it remained a hub, it remained a strong hub, but and maybe even a fortress hub, wherever the line is between hub and fortress, but where the moat was a little narrower and a little shallower around the airport than it is currently?
Dr. Shaver?
Personally, I don't think so. I think that, you know, there's a significant amount of activity at that airport. I also personally believe that there'd be a significant amount of activity out of that airport if this is not a hub at all also. There's a significant amount of business activity and transportation that would be required here, and somebody would serve it.
There are other questions for Dr. Shaver at this point. And Doctor, I don't know about your availability this afternoon, but I
can stay around for a little while. I can might have to go plug a parking meter at some point. But
well, we appreciate your comments very much and the expertise that you lend our discussion. I also want to welcome Representative Will Morgan, whose area, in addition to Representative Medoris Masons, is deeply impacted or possibly deeply impacted by this. In addition, we had Senator Carlson here earlier, and I meant to thank him for his attendance at today's hearing. Commissioner McElroy, former Mayor McElroy, who represented an area just like Representative Morgan, may well be deeply impacted. But today he's representing our friend the governor, as well as we look forward to your comments about the impact that this may have with respect to Minnesota. Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. For the record, my name is Dan McElroy. I serve as Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I'd like to testify in two parts. First of all, I have a statement from the governor that I'd like to read for the record. And secondly, I'd like to address some of the issues about the potential economic impact. And very honestly, to agree with previous witnesses, particularly Professor Shaver. But first of all, the message from the governor, and we've provided copies that would, and let me just read it. As we consider the proposed merger of Northwest and Delta, it is my hope the legislature will join with my administration on a bipartisan basis as we work to protect Minnesota's interests during the course of merger proceedings. Our goal is to maintain hub operations, related levels of flight service, and the maximum number of airline jobs possible in Minnesota. We believe our highly skilled workforce, efficient airport, and central location are assets that work in our favor. In addition, there are at least two major opportunities for us to influence the process. The first opportunity is by utilizing the leverage we have via existing agreements between Northwest and the Metropolitan Airports Commission. These total approximately $245 million in loans and $200 million in future lease concessions. In exchange, Northwest is committed to keep their hub and headquarters in Minnesota. I have expressed to the CEOs of Northwest and Delta that it is our expectation that the merged entity will honor those commitments. The second opportunity is by weighing in during the U.S. Department of Justice review process. We have made it clear that we intend to reserve judgment until the merged entity specifies its commitment to Minnesota regarding hub operations, headquarters, and employment level. We asked the airlines to provide us with details, and they have committed to getting that information to us. My administration is committed to protecting Minnesota's interests and intend to do so aggressively. Thank you for the opportunity to share these remarks with the committee. Let me move on, if I may. The Department of Employment and Economic Development has within it an economic analysis and research unit, and we spend a fair amount of time asking questions about jobs in Minnesota, payroll in Minnesota's future. We also operate programs to assist workers who may be dislocated because of changes in company employment. As we have testified in the past, the best information we have is that Northwest and its closely related entities, Mesabi Airlines, Northwest World Vacations, MLT Vacations, and its close partner Pinnacle Airlines, have in the range of 11,500 to 12,000 employees, of whom, as Mayor McGuire testified, we believe around 2,300 are employed at three operations in the city of Eagan. It is our goal and our belief that we should work hard in discussions with Northwest and Delta to maintain as many of those jobs as possible. Professor Shaver laid out the issues that the substantial majority of those jobs are airport-related jobs, they're there because of a viable hub. We would argue this is one of the best hubs in North America. When the Metropolitan Airports Commission testifies before the committee next week, they can provide more details.
But I spent 25 years in the travel agency business before selling those businesses in 2003. And it will come as some surprise to you, but that even in this case, Minnesota's weather is an advantage. Minnesota has the Metropolitan Airports Commission and the NSC have one of the best available percentages of any major airport in North America. Our location at the center of North America is an advantage. With the advent of flying over the polar routes to Europe, this is the North Coast gateway to the United States and to the North American market. We believe strongly that the hub is not at risk, and that airlines of the size of Northwest and Delta make good decisions, and that this hub is a good decision. We share Professor Shaver's concern about the headquarters. Although we are unwilling to assume that all changes in headquarters level employment need to come from MSP, Minneapolis-St. Paul is a dynamic place to run a global company. MarketWatch.com, a national website, ranked Minneapolis-St. Paul as the number one location in North America in which to run a global company last year, ranking it ahead of cities like Denver and Orlando and Atlanta and New York. We have, in 2007, we had the more Fortune 500 and Fortune 1000 headquarters per capita than any other metropolitan area in the country. 20 companies, Fortune 500 companies in the 2007 rankings are at home in Minnesota. We've actually added 4 Fortune 500 companies in the last 10 years in Minneapolis and St. Paul. 7 of the 25 largest privately held companies in the United States, 7 of the 100 largest privately held companies in the United States are headquartered here. We would like the opportunity to make the argument that this is a great place to run a global airline, and we hope to have an opportunity to compete for every job in the merged carrier. With that said, in an interview yesterday with the press in Washington, Doug Steenland and Richard Anderson said in various interviews that they expected up to 1,000 jobs to be at risk. And I want to make clear that for every family whose job is lost, their unemployment rate, their personal unemployment rate, becomes 100%. And we don't take that lightly for any of them. And I am concerned about the uncertainty of the all of Northwest's headquarters employees who are now wondering about their jobs, and we take that very seriously. And so for those families, this is a very big issue. We will. We have been told, however, that although I agree with Professor Shaver that a regulatory process is likely to take in the range of 9 months, most of the regulatory process that's gotten publicity is the U.S. process. In addition, there's a very significant process that has to take place in Japan for the transfer of the what are called Point Beyond or Fifth Freedom Rights at Narita. And I don't know if that, it has not been made public if that's the condition of the merger, but those are very significant processes that have to take place. We have been told by Northwest Management that they expect to have transition teams appointed, that Northwest will continue as a separate legal entity, and Mr. Hurst can comment on that when he testifies. And so we are concerned that the process of deciding which jobs will be in Minnesota as compared to other places may take longer than the 9 months. And we consider that to be a problem, very honestly, because of the uncertainty it provides the family. Now, let me put this in context. 1,000 jobs is important. 1,000 jobs represents about $80 million in annual payroll, plus the value. If Mayor McGuire's numbers and other numbers we've speculated or first speculated is that payroll and benefits is in the range of $80,000. We don't know that yet. That is at best an estimate. $80 million is a lot of money. It is in the context, however, of a gross state product of about $280 billion. The metropolitan area has approximately 1.65 million jobs. The state about 2.7 million jobs. And so the impact is to those families, and it does not have probably a great macroeconomic impact on the metropolitan region. We have added in the last 12 months a number of international headquarters because of competition. We're proud of the fact that Nestle Nutrition chose Minneapolis-St. Paul over a variety of other cities to headquarter its North American operations. Coloplast from Denmark chose Minneapolis-St. Paul over Atlanta, interestingly enough, as headquarters for its North American operations. I agree with Professor Shaver that the 1,000 jobs, the absorption rate, particularly because of the demographics, the problem is not to the macroeconomy of Minneapolis and St. Paul or Minnesota, it's to that 1,000 families. Now, it is premature to talk about services, but I do want to assure this committee and those representing the unions that represent these employees or unrepresented employees that Minnesota has one of the best dislocated worker programs in the country. We're one of only 12 states that have state revenue in addition to federal funds. And when at a time when layoffs occurred or when we knew what layoffs may occur, we'll move aggressively to assist those who may be dislocated. We'd like the opportunity to compete with Atlanta or with other Northwest and Delta locations for every single job in the new airline. And we understand, we've heard the publicity that it's going to be called Delta. We, just frankly, that's their business and the business of their shareholders. We still want to compete for every job, Mr. Chairman. With that, I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. I do have one question, which is I believe that the two entities have indicated that the headquarters will be located in Atlanta. How does that square with the governor's comment and your comment about you expect to hold Northwest to its commitment that the headquarters will remain here in Minnesota?
First of all, would be more comfortable if General Counsel from MAC talked about the definition of headquarters and whether the final entity, and Mr. Hurst may be able to answer, if the final entity is going to operate as a holding company with a number of operating subsidiaries. We will work with them within the exact language of the contract and how the final airline is organized. Our biggest concern is the number of jobs. And many very large companies have a variety of entities with a variety of headquarters.
All right, Commissioner, are there other questions for Commissioner McElroy? With due respect, Commissioner, that sounded like a lawyer.
Yeah.
And I mean that. It's coming from one. So I mean that with great respect.
Mr. Chairman, I am not an attorney. I do, however, at times have to talk as if I were one.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McElroy and Commissioner, I thought I heard that there'd be no jobs lost as a result of this merger, that was what came from the Delta and Northwest officials. So is this $1,000 or 1,000 jobs at risk? Does this represent a change in what you've heard from the two companies?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I do not recall a guarantee. I wish I had, because we certainly, if that had been made, I would have jumped on it. What I had heard was an assurance that they would not close the hubs, at least discussion by management, and it was reaffirmed yesterday by Mr. Kingland and Mr. Anderson, that they did not just expect to see a decline in frontline jobs, in pilots and flight attendants and luggage handling positions, that they expected the risk was in headquarters positions, and I don't believe that's a change to the best of my knowledge.
In fact, I believe they've been very careful to say they don't expect a reduction in frontline jobs, and I keep listening closely to hear what impact that will have on headquarters jobs. And yesterday it was confirmed by the two CEOs that, in fact, there are 1,000 jobs at risk, very good jobs, as I understand it. And if the mayor is correct, and I think he's probably in that right ballpark, perhaps as much as $80 million in payroll. And my understanding, I can't remember where I saw it, but it was along the lines of indirect consequence of that in the neighborhood of $300 or $400 million. And Commissioner, I say that as a question to you.
Yeah.
When there's a loss in the context direct of $80 million, what does that equate to in your estimation, indirectly to Minnesota's economy?
Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to make an economist available who could answer that in great detail. But I'd be surprised if the multiplier is that high. We usually think that manufacturing has the highest multiplier because they are buying raw materials and transportation is finished and in-process goods and a variety of other services, and often talk in a multiplier like 2.5. I'd be surprised in what amounts to a technical service environment like this if the multiplier is that high. But also, if, depending on absorption, we can replace that payroll fairly quickly, the indirect is going to be less than that. I'd be happy if you'd like to make time at your next hearing or a subsequent hearing to make an economist available to discuss that in detail.
Thank you, Commissioner. Even if an economist from your department could provide us that answer for that sort of industry or those sorts of jobs,
that might well be enough. And by the way, we rely on you. I mean, you've been representative, mayor, chief, we've lawyer, an economist is probably within your talent level as well. So,
Mr. Chairman, thank you, but no. learned is I claim to be neither an attorney nor an economist, and I try not to talk like one of those any more often than I have to.
I believe that we've got a couple of. you can just tell me. Representative Dominguez has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, has there actually been, there's 1,000 jobs that are going to be lost. Is there any discussion on were these folks that are losing their jobs, any training for these individuals, any self-support for these individuals, whoever they may be in those decisions?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dominguez, first of all, we're not willing to concede that they need to be in Minnesota. We want to fight for every job in Minnesota.
That's what I wanted to hear.
If, however, there are losses in Minnesota, through the Dislocated Workers Program, there is some resource available. We would also hope there would be negotiations for severance packages or other assistance if jobs are lost. But our attitude is we want to fight to keep every job possible in Minnesota.
Thank you, Commissioner. Let's see other questions. I did promise to... I'm sorry, Representative Mahoney.
I've had fun with Commissioner McElroy any number of different times for the last almost 10 years now. Commissioner McElroy and I have a pretty good understanding of questions that we need to ask, and we've been on economic development together an awful lot, and I actually did learn a few things from him. And here's my question. We like to brag in Minnesota. We have a lot of corporate headquarters. There's flight overlap from Delta and Northwest. One of the good points of having your headquarters in Minnesota is you can climb on an airplane and fly to Tokyo or to Paris or any points in between. So you can get almost anywhere in the world from 20 miles from here. How's that going to affect these corporate headquarters? And you know, I've got one other question. How is your view on how that's going to affect your ability to recruit these headquarters into the Minnesota area?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, the hub is very important. But we think the hub is very well supported by the markets and by our geographic location and by work that the Metropolitan Airports Commission have undertaken to make MSP an attractive place to run a global airline. I will point out that Denver, for example, is not a headquarters to any airline, hasn't been, any major carrier. They have Frontier, but they have not been a hub and spoke headquarters for a long time. And they have continued to maintain a robust and growing hub with growing opportunities, particularly to Europe. And the hub is very important. Every time we make a major presentation to a company considering operations here, the opportunity to fly nonstop to a variety of places is one of our sales features, so it's very important.
That will be enough.
All right.
We'll have more of them by Tuesday.
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, I'm going back to your first reading of the letter from the governor, and I just kind of want to publicly say that I've had a couple opportunities, although they're brief when we're playing ice hockey with the governor to talk about the Northwest, and he's actually asked, you know, what it means to me as a average luggage store, but I just appreciate some of the efforts that he's done. Mainly, I've noticed the thing that I thought was important to the state is that he did ask Mr. Steenlin, is there something that Minnesota could do? And I thought Mr. Steenlin was pretty clear, and you know, we've had some discussion here as far as you know maybe throwing money at the situation, and I just appreciate that the governor's asked that the question, and that he seems like he's concerned about the hub and the jobs, and you're saying that again today, and I appreciate that. And I just want to kind of add to what I'm hearing from other folks, because it is very important that we have, you know, the quality of the hub, the quality of the jobs, and just how important those aspects are. So please bring that back to the governor, and thank you for bringing the note from him.
I will, Representative. Mr. Chairman, if I could just make one other point. We shouldn't underestimate that Professor Shaver commented on the cost of the impact of fuel as a kind of strategic challenge for airlines for some time to come. Because of changes in how airlines are allowed to navigate and polar routes and open skies arrangements, Minneapolis-St. Paul is often the shortest distance to places in Europe, all over Europe, particularly growing areas in northern and eastern Europe. And so this is a great place to operate an airline, even in a high fuel environment, because of the short polar route distances from Minneapolis-St. Paul, whether it's to Frankfurt or Helsinki or St. Petersburg or a variety of other places. It's a thousand or more miles shorter than going there from Atlanta, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Medor? Because I do have,
I know,
I want to try to keep us on relatively a good time so I can get folks out of here for the week.
Well, thank you very much,
Medor.
Mr. Chair. This was, in my area in Apple Valley, we actually had a lot of the mechanics who were suffering during the strike. And what I'm wondering is if, in fact, we're able to attract some new airlines, given, you said, even in a high fuel economy right state right now, that this is still a great place to be. If we were able to bring in some new airlines to operate here, would you actually see an increase in those hub-level jobs? Would we be able to not only accommodate less flights from Northwest, but be able to bring in some new hub-level jobs for new airlines coming in? And what might that look like?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Medor, I think the representatives of the Airport Commission may be better able to answer that than I can, but the if other airlines chose to operate spokes here, and there are some very successful examples of spokes like Icelandic's four times a week service through Reykjavik to Europe, those all help, and those are all good paying jobs. And so that's something we should welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Commissioner. Mr. Hirsch, if you'd approach, I'd appreciate it. We, as you can tell, I overbooked a little bit, but we had Mr. Hirsch's assurance from a few days ago that he would, I believe you're coming from Washington, D.C. He was going to be here by about 2 o'clock, so I scheduled to be ready for you about 2:20, and lo and behold, your flight arrived early, apparently. So welcome to the committee. If you have general comments that you would like to make before we begin or before we take questions, we're certainly welcome to, or you're certainly welcome to make those comments.
Well, I appreciate that very much, Mr. Chairman.
And I was going to say, somebody's approached with it. Yeah.
I feel like I lost my umbilical cord. Chairman Atkins, Vice Chairman Lilly, distinguished members of the Commerce and Labor Committee, good afternoon. I'm Ben Hirsch, Senior Vice President and General Counsel of Northwest Airlines. I'm here with Kathleen Nelson, who's from our finance department, so I think we'll be able to answer any questions about financing arrangements between the state and Northwest that I can answer. I appreciate the opportunity to appear here today to explain the reasons for the recently announced merger between Northwest Airlines and Delta. And in particular, to emphasize that the primary beneficiaries of this merger will be our frontline employees and the communities we serve. I'm particularly honored, Mr. Chairman, to have the opportunity to appear before you on behalf of Northwest. We are proud, very proud, to be Minnesota's hub airline. Mr. Chairman, the U.S. airline industry is at a crossroads, creating two choices for Northwest. One choice is to continue as a standalone airline, facing an unprecedented rise in oil prices, which will cost Northwest an estimated $1.4 billion more this year than last. Competing with discount carriers that now have captured about a third of the U.S. market. And internationally, facing heightened competition from large, consolidated, well-funded foreign airlines that are increasing service to the United States under open skies agreements that have open to the United States market. The other choice is to merge with Delta to create a single, stronger airline, better able to face these challenges.
Delta and Northwest are the two strongest network carriers today by every objective financial measure. By combining the end-to-end networks of these two great airlines, we will achieve over $1 billion a year in cost savings and revenue improvements. And these are clearly documented, at least internally at this point. And we'll be able to build a more comprehensive and balanced network. The combined company will therefore be better able to satisfy its customers' demands, and because it will be more financially resilient, better able to support the jobs that depend on us, maintain the service that we now provide to our communities, and meet competition at home and abroad. From the outset, Northwest promised that it would only consider a transaction if it believed that the transaction would benefit our communities and our employees. And we believe we have met this objective. Our employees and the communities we serve will, in fact, be the primary beneficiaries of this merger, because the merger will make the airline service we provide and the jobs we support more secure. Minnesotans do not need to be reminded that the airline industry faces constant turmoil and financial challenges. This inherent instability creates unacceptable levels of uncertainty and risk for our employees and our communities. Our primary objective in merging Northwest and Delta has been to put the service we provide to our communities and the jobs we provide to the people we employ on the safest possible footing. This will be a merger of addition, not subtraction. Combining the complementary networks of the two carriers means that Northwest and Delta will serve more U.S. communities and connect to more worldwide destinations than any other global airline. This will be the first U.S. flag carrier to provide online service from the United States to all of the world's major business centers. Our communities and our employees will benefit from the improved financial resiliency and better competitive position of the combined company. The $1 billion plus in annual synergies that the merger will create will help us withstand volatile fuel prices and cyclical downturns. The proposed combination also will allow us better to use Northwest's valuable Pacific franchise, better develop both carriers' domestic hubs, including Minneapolis-St. Paul, and better match the right planes to the right route, which has a significant financial benefit to the combined airline. Northwest has already integrated many aspects of its technology with Delta through the SkyTeam Alliance, paving the way for a smooth integration process. All of these benefits will be achieved without harming competition. No hubs will be closed. The domestic and international networks of Northwest and Delta are end-to-end, so the two carriers compete only to a minimal extent. Domestically, Northwest's routes are concentrated in the Midwest, while Delta is strong in the Southeast and West. Internationally, Northwest is strong in Asia, while Delta has strength in Europe, Latin America, Africa, and the Middle East. Of the more than 800 domestic nonstop routes that Northwest and Delta collectively fly, there are only 12 nonstop city pairs in which the two airlines compete directly head-to-head. The vast majority of these nonstop overlaps enjoy substantial competition from other carriers. The domestic airline industry has become increasingly competitive over the past several years. Low-cost carriers have grown at an average annual rate of 11% since 2000 and now serve all major cities, including all major hubs. In addition, internet technology has created a transparency revolution so that consumers can now quickly and easily compare the offerings of competing carriers for any given route. Adjusted for inflation, airline fares are, you see varying measures of this, but Delta estimates 30% lower today than they were 30 years ago when the industry was deregulated. So we would take issue with people who say that, I understand people would like to pay less, but we would take issue with people who say that fares are too high. We do not believe that the merger will have any effect on fares, and none of the synergies that we project are predicated on the assumption that fares will go up. International markets will also remain intensely competitive. Today's foreign airlines carry more than half the traffic to and from the United States. Internationally, the combined carrier will have a broader network, closer in scope to that which foreign airlines already enjoy. We will be better positioned to compete effectively against foreign flag airlines, particularly for the business of corporate customers.
We did not come easily to the decision to merge with Delta. Northwest is proud of its long history as a standalone carrier, and the company has made Herculean efforts to continue operating independently. As part of our recent Chapter 11 reorganization, employees made substantial sacrifices to help Northwest reduce costs. And as a result, Northwest earned $760 million last year, $125 million of which went to our employees as profit sharing and incentive payments. Yet with fuel prices at record highs, our security is not assured, and action is required to put the airline on a safer footing for our employees and for the communities we serve. We are very aware that change is hard for everyone. Many of our employees have families who have worked at Northwest for generations. But the world is changing, and it will continue to change, regardless of whether we merge or not. We believe that the worst alternative for our employees and for our communities at this point in time could be to do nothing. 30 years ago, in one of the first noteworthy airline mergers after deregulation, North Central and Southern combined to form Republic Airlines, which became the largest airline in the country measured by domestic destinations. In 1986, Northwest, then primarily known for its international service, merged with Republic. At the time of deregulation in 1978, there were three international airlines, Pan Am, TWA, and Northwest. Only Northwest has survived, and because only Northwest was able to acquire, through the Republic merger, a domestic route system to support its international routes. But for that merger and for the foresight that led to it, there would be no Northwest Airlines today. And we believe that we are at a similar decision point today. When Northwest surveyed the landscape for potential merger partners late last year, it was clear to us that Delta was by far the best alternative. Because of commitments made by Delta to its employees in fighting off a hostile acquisition attempt by U.S. Airways, Delta would only consider merging with Northwest if we would agree that the headquarters of the combined airline would be in Atlanta, that the airline would be named Delta, and that Delta senior management would end up in the most senior position.
Mr. Hurst, can you state that once again? Delta based on what?
Delta made commitments to its employees in the context of the U.S. Air attempted acquisition in earlier in 2007 that led it to take the position when we began talking to them that they would only consider a merger if the headquarters were to remain in Atlanta. And if the name of the airline was to be Delta, and if the CEO of the airline remained the CEO of Delta. And because we felt that the benefits of the transaction were so important to our employees and to our community, we felt that the conditions that Delta was establishing were not a bar to the transaction, should not be a bar to the transaction, because of the security and the stronger financial footing that the transaction would mean for our employees and our communities. Let me talk a little about the intentions of Delta.
If I might interrupt to that point, Representative Mahoney?
Yeah. You know, I just changed my hearing aid battery, so I was pretty sure I heard you say the name, the headquarters, the name, and the senior leadership. And then when the chair asked you to repeat that, you said the CEO. So which is it? Is it the senior leadership of Delta is going to be in charge, or is it just the CEO and there's still some hope for senior leadership of Northwest?
Mr. Hurt.
It's Representative
Mahoney.
Mahoney. It's the CEO. It's the CEO. And by the way, Mr. Chairman, I know the committee has requested documents relating to the terms of the merger and establishing them. We'll be happy to provide the merger agreement to the committee, which establishes all the terms.
Thank you, Mr.
I wanted to address for a minute the
commitments that Delta senior management has made to the employees of the combined airline. Here is what Richard Anderson, who is the CEO at Delta, has said. And I'm quoting, we will set aside sufficient equity so that all employees can have an unprecedented equity stake in the merged company. And by that they mean that upon closing, all employees in the merged company will receive outright equity grants, not stock options or restricted stock. We will move all employees over time up to industry standard pay and benefits. As you know, during the Chapter 11 reorganization process, Northwest employees all took substantial concessions. And so this commitment will mean a substantial improvement to their circumstances. We will honor our commitment to all U.S.-based frontline employees to provide a process for the integration of seniority in a fair and equitable manner. We will maintain the existing pension plans of both companies, both for current employees and for those already retired. We will maintain our top-tier profit-sharing plan and operational rewards program. We have assured our frontline people that there will not be any involuntary furloughs as a result of the merger. And particularly important in view of the impact on our industry of record fuel prices and economic uncertainty, we will strengthen our airline financially and provide opportunities for our people to benefit from our planned growth and future success. Delta is also well aware, and Mr. Anderson is also well aware, of the concerns of Minnesotans about the future of the Minneapolis-St. Paul hub and about future employment levels in Minnesota. While the specifics have not yet been worked out, Delta has committed to maintain significant jobs, facilities, and operations in Minnesota. In addition, Delta has pledged to maintain charitable contributions in Minnesota comparable to ours. If Minnesota is prepared to approach Delta in a spirit of partnership, we believe that Delta is prepared to work with the state to make specific commitments in the areas of jobs and hub operations that I think the state will find very, very satisfying. Mr. Chairman, that's the end of my prepared remarks. I'm happy to answer any questions that I can.
Thank you, Mr. Hurst. I've got just a couple, and then I expect to just throw it open to the committee. One is based on your comments, I would phrase it in the form of a statement and then just look for you to react to it, which is based on what you said. It would appear to an outsider that Delta had Northwest over a barrel, that you agreed to let them own it, run it, name it, move the headquarters. Is that a correct statement?
Let me respond to it one by one, Mr. Chairman. In terms of ownership, this is not, in my view, an acquisition. It's a merger because it's accomplished through an exchange of shares, and in which the Northwest Airlines shareholders will receive shares in the new combined company, and the Delta shareholders will retain shares in the company. The management teams are expected to be a blend of the two managements, and while no details in that regard have been worked out yet, because we haven't had time to begin the transition process, we will very quickly establish a transition management team and a series of teams that will flow off that functionally. And we expect that to result in a blending of management. Now, ultimately, if you're going to merge two airlines, you have to have a headquarters someplace. Delta is a larger airline than Northwest, financially larger. Its equity value is larger. If the headquarters will be in Atlanta, and if there's to be a blended management team as we expect, we believe that many of the jobs that are currently in Northwest management will continue to be preserved, that as many of the individuals who occupy those positions will continue to occupy similar positions in the merged airline. With respect to the name, again, Delta is a larger airline than Northwest by a significant measure, and I think most people would argue that between the brands, the Delta brand is a stronger brand.
worldwide. And so if one were to objectively make a selection between the two brands, the chances are that, that one would decide that Delta is the brand that one would keep. So I don't think it's accurate to say that we were held over a barrel. We felt that this merger was a highly beneficial transaction to our employees and to our communities because it puts the airline on a much sounder financial footing. It makes it much less likely that we would have a repeat of the kind of experience we had in 2005 when Northwest went into Chapter 11. And we felt an obligation to move forward with it.
And Mr. Hertz, would you say, though, that the transaction that you just described with the headquarters moving to Atlanta and upwards or possibly up to 1,000 jobs in jeopardy, that violates the agreement that Northwest has with the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman, I take the difference, does not, and would not. The commitment that Northwest made in connection with the bond issue in 1992 was to maintain its headquarters here as long as the bonds are outstanding. Northwest will have, or Delta will have, two choices following the merger. One will be to renegotiate that covenant. And if there is a willingness on the part of the state to do that, I believe that there will be a willingness on the part of Delta to try to work out commitments in areas, in the areas of jobs and in the areas of airline service and hub operation that will be very satisfactory to the state. The other option is simply to defease the bond, and in which case it's clear that the covenants disappear. The cost of defeasing bonds at the end of 2009 will be about $212 million. And at that time, Delta expects to have liquidity in the range of $7 billion. And so it would not be out of the realm of possibility that if an agreement can't be reached, that Delta would proceed down that road. But I'm quite sure they don't want to do that. They prefer not to do that.
And this Earth, I give you credit, it was a well-formed answer, but my question very simply was the transaction, as you described, with the headquarters moving to Atlanta, would violate the agreement that we have. Would it not? It requires the headquarters to be in Minnesota. I mean, are we, if the headquarters moves and the contract says you're going to keep the headquarters here, is that not a violation of the agreement?
No, it's not, because the agreement also provides that at any time Northwest can defease the bond and the covenants cease. Yes. And it's no question in my mind that Delta would defease the bond before it would violate the agreement.
Okay, and so the short answer is that if they choose to move the headquarters, they could defease, which means they'd have to pay the $245 million when they did that.
Well,
be that a year from now or 3 years
from
now.
But that's right. Okay.
Give or take, because I assume they'd continue to make some payments.
Right.
Okay. The chief question is it your understanding that under the new, be it a acquisition, be it a merger, whatever the transaction would be, or a wholly owned subsidiary that Northwest would become of Northwest or of Delta, whatever it would be described as, that those terms, however, would still apply to the new entity, that Delta would have to abide by the terms of that agreement. Fair enough?
Absolutely. If the merger goes forward, as we expect it to, and there's a change of control, then Delta will be a successor to Northwest's obligation under that agreement. And as long as, I think that's the short answer to the question.
Okay. I suspect there may well be other questions as well. I don't mean to monopolize. So if anybody else has concerns, Representative LaForce.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And it's a segue from a question you asked. I had just one question for Mr. Hurst at this time. Under this combination, is Delta assuming all of Northwest's obligations, including the ones with respect to the covenants?
Mr. Hurst? Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative LaForce. That I believe is accurate, that that Delta would essentially step into Northwest's shoes following the closing of the transaction, assuming the agreement is in exactly the same form that it's in now.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there other questions? Representative Lilly, and then Representative Dabney, and then Representative Burns.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hurst, I'm your employee. I'm also your teammate. So a lot of people have been asking me what's going on. Am I moving to Atlanta? Where are things at? Where is my luggage? Mr. Davidman back there can kind of attest to that. I believe we lost Representative Junkie's suitcase on his way to Cuba, but
that was just our way of telling him to get a new set of clothes.
Yeah. You know? Better shirt.
It's kind of a scary thought, really. Representative Junkie in Cuba without clothes. representing Minnesota.
Please move on.
Okay. Now that I painted a beautiful picture. I've listened to Mr. Steenlin and Mr. Anderson when they were out east, and you've done a similar thing today. You've been really careful and appreciate your being here. We have a lot of jobs here in Minnesota, and I know the impact. And I've heard about this. I've only been with you as a coworker for 10 years, but I know the industry is in turmoil, and certainly the time in which I've been there, it's been in turmoil. Just a variety of different things have happened, and one of the quotes I heard that they mentioned out east was, "This isn't unique to Minnesota. The industry, what's going on." All the major airlines together collectively have shed almost 150,000 jobs, and collectively have lost, I think I wrote 29 million, but I'm probably guessing 29 billion since 2001. And I guess first off, I think it's important to me as a machinist to just express to you my disappointment that we have not been at the table. We have not been included. I know that you've involved the pilots, but there's a lot of people that work for you and care about the business and have stickers on their cars, with a Northwest logo and been proud to work for the team. And we have not been involved. We have not even been at the kiddies table. So it's a little frustrating. There's about 14,000 of, just for example, a machinist. 5,600 of them in Minnesota. And, I'm sure they're getting the same thing I am. I'm fairly lucky. I probably shouldn't be there. I enjoy working there. I've always enjoyed the travel benefits, but... it probably would be time for me to move on if something happened. But there's a lot of good people that work for you in this business that maybe haven't had the opportunity to go to school and have been there starting maybe my age and have been there a long time. And, as they're aging, they're getting sore from lifting things and, wear and tear on your body. There's good people. I'm just going to mention a couple people. I can think of one guy I know. And he lives in one of the representatives' district here in the West Metro, Southwest Metro. And he happens to be an African-American person. When he was young, he murdered a person. And he, I'm not used to working with someone that's murdered somebody, so it's kind of new to me. And he went to work for Northwest 25 years ago. So he's the first one there every day because he's afraid of losing his job. He actually lost his job at one time when they did a background check, but he had checked off that he did have this in the past. He shows up every day, works hard, makes sure the customers get their bag. He works really hard. What is he going to do? I mean, honestly, in our today's world, I mean, it'll be really hard for him to find work. There's a Filipino guy. He works on an encoder. Encoder in a bag room. Essentially, bags come flying through all these belts. When you guys go to the counter, you bring your bags and you drop them off, and then it's all of a sudden they go through the wall and they go into this belt system, and it's pretty fascinating. And it goes, so a bag will go through, and he runs like a barcode machine and these sort of things. And then, to be honest, he's hurt. He got hurt working for you and for me, you know, for our company. And now he works at this encoder, and I don't think he can do anything else probably, but he shows up early and works hard, and actually he's more willing to stay late than I am. And I don't know what he's going to do. You know, it's just a scary time and world, and, you know, I'm disappointed as a Minnesotan that, you know, that Minnesota isn't on the top of this deal. You know, I hope you bring that message back. You know, I think we're a proud state, and I'm proud of Northwest, you know, being a Minnesota company, and then, you know, to give that up. You know, and I know when our folks gave concessions, it wasn't to hope, you know, that you would broker a deal that would go send these jobs or to, you know, have it become Delta. You know, it was realizing the need for the company, being part of the team, and to give that. So I just kind of want to express that and a couple other things. There was a letter the other day, I'm just going to mention it too, about the economics. And thank you for indulging me, the rest of members, and hearing this out. But, you know, you've got good people that care about the work they're doing. And this letter to the editor, and I don't know if the facts are absolutely true, but this person says, according to the U.S. Department of Transportation statistics, Northwest employees has the lowest number of employees per aircraft, 82. The industry average is 109. Delta has 107. I mean, just so you know, your people are showing up to work, and they want to work, and, you know, they're proud. A lot of them, if you look in the parking lot, have stickers on their car, and that always shows to me that people are proud of what they're doing, you know. So I guess I'm disappointed that we weren't involved, and I hope you bring that forward, and I hope you consider, you know, realizing there's good people that want to work. They're not getting rich. You know, there are a lot of them are coaches that go home at night. You know, they know they're not going to get, you know, rich doing what they're doing, but they want to make a living. You know, I mean, that's kind of the offset. It seems fair and reasonable. But, you know, but there are coaches. They're the ones that, you know, on Sunday or, you know, Wednesday church, they're catechism teachers and, you know, the average person that are helping making a better Minnesotan community. So I'm sorry to go off, but a lot of it is because we weren't even involved. So a lot of our people are afraid, and so I hope you bring that back, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Zalilla, can I maybe make a couple of comments?
Yes, sir.
It's sort of hard to know where to start because I feel a lot of the same things that you're expressing. I've been with the airline since 1990, although I took a few years off beginning of this decade. I feel like it's a part of me, and I feel like I'm a part of it. I have a lot of really good friends who have been with the IAM, and they're people I stay in touch with. And I totally agree with what you said. I know how committed they are to the airline. I know how hard they work and how much they sacrifice. And I hate, like everybody else, I think, who's connected with it, to see the red tail go away. But we felt we had to put our emotions aside in trying to deal with a situation that the airline finds itself in the economy that we have, and in the kind of volatility that the industry experiences. Just to give you an example, a couple of days ago we reported our first quarter earnings. They were $191 million loss. That included an increased fuel bill of $445 million. Northwest flew exactly the same route, used basically the same plane, and it consumed almost exactly the same amount of fuel as it did in the first quarter of 2007. We consumed 420 million gallons of fuel, in the first quarter of this year, 419 million last year. But it cost us $445 million more. We were only able to recover about $100 million of that in fare increases. So for every dollar that the price of oil goes up at these levels, Northwest is getting back about 25 cents in fare. that can't continue without something serious breaking in a hurry, because those numbers are so large. When we began thinking about this merger, oil was at $80 to $90 a barrel, and we were still concerned, because we had projected in our business plan when we emerged from Chapter 11 that it would be about 65. And we knew that the price of oil was only one of any number of things that come out of the blue that can hit the airline industry. SARS, the Gulf War, recession, September 11, 2001. Any number of things can impact this industry in a way that's devastating, and it's not devastating so much to shareholders, because shareholders rarely take anything out of the business. Devastating to employees and the communities that we serve. Employees depend on us for jobs. The communities we serve depend on us for service and for their connection to the larger economy. We take those obligations very seriously. And when we put this transaction together, one of the things that was key to us was that frontline employees, meaning people like yourself, Representative Lilly, who are on the front line, who are responsible for, among other things, the fact that Northwest was number one in baggage performance last year. We lost fewer bags, delayed fewer bags than anybody else, thanks to you and others. We wanted to put the airline on a safer footing for people who were in that position, so that if prices in oil continued to increase, if there were other shocks that hit the industry, we would have a greater margin of survival, and we'd be less likely to have to go back to our employees, which we would never want to do again, for help. So we'd be less likely to have to go back into Chapter 11, so that we'd be less likely to risk terminations or suspensions of service. And we did get that. We have a pledge from Delta that there will be no frontline employee layoffs in connection with this transaction. So your friends on the ramp can be assured of continuing to be employed here, albeit under another name. And we're proud of that. We think it's a good transaction. We think it's the best thing that we could see doing in this world for the people who work for us in the communities we serve. Now, you ask, why hasn't the IAM been at the table? The real question is, why have the pilots been at the table at this stage? Because normally when airlines merge, they simply reach a corporate agreement, they go through the regulatory review process, and then after the deal closes, the employee issues are worked out generally under federal law and under the terms of the collective bargaining agreement of the unions involved. In this case, because there's only one major union at Delta, which is the Airline Pilots Association, and it's the same union that represents our pilots, the Airline Pilots Association here, we attempted to do something that had never been done before, which was to encourage these two groups to talk in advance of the merger closing, an attempt to work out seniority integration, which has always been the biggest difficulty following airline mergers and the one single factor that has disrupted service the most. We also attempted to work with them to reach agreement on a new collective bargaining agreement. And we've made very substantial progress, certainly at the Delta side. The two groups made very substantial progress on seniority integration. They didn't get there in time. Delta has now reached agreement with its pilots on a new collective bargaining agreement, and there will be a process now between now and closing, at which these issues, the contract issues and the seniority integration issues, will be addressed for the Northwest pilots, and I have every reason to believe that what will happen will be successful, and that the two groups will end up in a harmonized position by the time we close. With respect to other unions, such as the IAM, there are not counterparts on the other side of the aisle. And what will happen there is, and so there was no basis for having union-to-union discussions, but what will happen is that following closing, there's a process that's mandated by federal law to ensure that there will be fair and equitable seniority integration and to determine whether or not the union representation will continue. And there will be a process by which there will be an opportunity for the combined groups each craft and class to make a showing of interest. If it's sufficient, which is means that if there are 35% of the combined group that wants an election, there will be an election to determine if representation will continue. And if it does, there will be the negotiation of a collective bargaining agreement covering the entire group. Until then, the agreements that Northwest has negotiated with its union, such as the IAM, will continue in place, applying to the Northwest or the former Northwest employees who've moved over to Delta. But it's a process that's covered by federal law, and it's based on a democratic process that takes place following the merger to determine whether the representation continues. And seniority integration guaranteed by law to be fair and equitable.
Representative Dabney and then Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Representative Lilly illustrated well, this is the Commerce and Labor Committee. So I've just got a couple of questions on that in your recent discussion of how you will merge a largely unionized workforce with a largely non-unionized workforce provoked the first question, which is, will the new management remain neutral in that process if the combined workforce chooses to move forward with exploring unionization?
Mr. Chairman, and I'm sorry, Representative
Dabney.
You know, I think I personally don't have any knowledge of how Delta operates in that world. And I think probably your questions will be better addressed to Delta executives if and when they respond to your request.
And Mr. Hirsch, to that point, do you know those fellas?
I do know them.
And if there's women involved there too, if you could put in a good word for us, we'd appreciate it.
I would be happy to do so.
That would be important to us. We had a reference earlier to the fact that this committee does have the ability to issue a subpoena. We've not gone down that road in the past, and I don't think our new neighbors at Delta would prefer that we do that. You also referenced the fact that you got our document request, which the Delta folks have not so much as acknowledged. So if you would be kind enough to perhaps put us in contact with Mr. Anderson, I'll give you my cell phone and my frequent flyer miles, and we'll figure out a way to get it done. But I think it's important for folks here, and you know, Mr. Lilly, Representative Lilly, did a nice job, and I think others on Tuesday will as well, that we're hoping to be good neighbors and partners and teammates. But it's hard to do that when we're not hearing from, you know, any of the folks on that part of the team.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm sure that Mr. Anderson does as well. I do know him very well. He's a good friend, and he's a good friend in Minnesota. What I would say on Richard's behalf is that we have all been buried trying to deal with this transaction over the last several weeks, and that means, I mean, demand from Congress, for example, the necessity of responding directly to employees. Now, I don't think there's anything intentional on the part of Delta. I do know them. I know they want the transaction to work extremely well from the standpoint of the community. Richard Anderson still lives here. I mean, he still maintains a resident here, and I think he's still a taxpayer.
And that's why, Mr.
So I don't think you're going to see him reluctant to talk to you and talk to you.
And you haven't heard us. We've been very understanding of Mr. Steenland's schedule, and my hope was that by today we'd have a set time when he'd be able to join us. We recognize that his schedule is being sent. He's spending a great deal of time visiting our friends in Washington, D.C., but I've had assurance that there will be an opportunity when he'll be able to come and visit with us as well. But and that's why we've not been jerks about it. We understand people's schedules, but we sure would, and I think it would go a long ways towards assuaging people's concerns if we'd have a response other than, I think we got a call asking for our address.
But that's been it. Yeah.
Well, Richard knows how to find the legislature.
So I'll go. I'll be happy to pass.
We'd appreciate that. Representative Davenport, you said you had a second question.
I've got a couple of quick questions. And you can assure Mr. Anderson that, as the members know all too well, we are open 24 hours. So accommodations can be made for his schedule, or at least until 2 in the morning.
And I will pass on Chairman Atkins' offer of frequent flyer miles to get him
out. Northwest. He'll fly Northwest, will he?
So, just to clarify, I heard no commitment for neutrality towards the employee group from management. I'll give you a chance. Well, let me ask the second question. You can respond to that as well. You made in your comments a commitment to honor the pension obligations for current and retired employees, but made no indications about the continuation of those pension opportunities for future employees. What is management's vision for the benefit package for new employees going forward to the combined airline then?
I would have to defer to Delta on a question like that. What I did was I read statements that Richard Anderson has put in record.
We thought it was word for word. I was looking at Representative Lilly when you were reading the opening comments. Because we listened to the press conference, and I think it was almost verbatim. So you were very much on message.
I took it from his statement I used for that press conference. But I think they're significant commitments. My understanding is that at present time, Delta's benefits tend to be better than Northwest. And on the pension side, as you know, Northwest was able in its bankruptcy to preserve its defined benefit pension plan. It's the only airline to do that. Obviously, that will stay in place. Kathleen, unless you have some thoughts on the question on the benefit side, I think I would suggest that that's, again, I'm not in senior management at Delta, and it's probably a question better directed to what Delta's plans are post-closing.
One last question, and as a lawyer, you may be able to answer this one. You'd indicated that on the date of the merger, all employees would get an equity stake. Will there be limitations on employees' ability who choose to sell that stake? Will there be time limitations that they will be required to hold on to those stocks, or are they free to do with them what they please?
This is what I have heard Delta say, because this is a Delta commitment, that they have set aside something approaching some amount of equity not to exceed 10% for employees, which is not an insignificant piece of company, and that they intend to make these, distribute the equity in grants, outright grants, at closing to all employees of the company, and they will not be restricted, so that employees will be free to sell them at that time if they choose, or hold them and do what they want.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Davenport. Representative Burns and then Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for being here today, Mr. Hurst, for answering our questions. Retaining and growing jobs is very important to the members of this committee in a bipartisan basis, to the House of Representatives, and clearly to the people of Minnesota. And I first want to say I very much appreciate Commissioner McElroy on behalf of our governor indicating that as a state we will fight and compete for every job, and the job of the gentleman that Representative Lilly was talking about, his co-workers. As a state, we certainly don't control the economy here in Minnesota. As a state government, we don't control the economy. We do have some important things to say about our business climate, specifically through our tax policy. Now, there was a proposal that came out from members of the House of Representatives that had a combination of incentives specific to Northwest and also changes to our tax policy that would affect every Minnesota business through our corporate tax rate. Now, I understand that Delta, through its board of directors and the chief executive officer, have ideas and desires as to where the headquarters should be located. But ultimately, both the CEO and board answer to the shareholders of Delta and
you and executives at Northwest answer to your shareholders as well. So my question is, if we as a legislature, partnering with the governor, decide to make changes in our tax policy, and I would certainly say my preference, if we do make changes, are that they be across the board and affect every Minnesota business. But if we do make changes in tax policy, because that would be better for the people of Minnesota and for jobs in the state, is it possible that Northwest and Delta would reconsider and review location of headquarters? Mr. Hurst.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burns, let me start out by saying that the merger agreement provides that the headquarters of the combined company will be in Atlanta. So that's in the agreement. And it would seem to me that if the legislature wants to initiate reconsideration of that commitment, it would probably have to be directed to Delta. I think it's unlikely, frankly, that they would reconsider that position. I do think that, as some of the earlier witnesses alluded to, that Delta has committed that to retaining significant jobs, facilities, and operations. Now, that's a broad phrase, and it doesn't have any meaning yet. But I do think that it's very realistic to consider speaking with Delta, negotiating with Delta. You have the leverage of the company toward the establishment of executive offices for very significant airline operations, very significant business functions here. There have been other mergers that have occurred. Not all mergers are created equal, but the Wells Fargo transaction at the end of the day has retained a very significant benefit. Thompson Knight, I think it was alluded to earlier by Mayor McGuire, another example of a merger that has worked out very well for the state. I frankly thought that Mayor McGuire's comments were intriguing, because we do have important functions here, and decisions haven't been made about where they will go. NATCO is certainly one example of the flight training center. The data center is another example of a very significant resource that Delta will need to decide how to capitalize on. So I think the fact that you can only have one corporate headquarters, you only need one CFO, you only need one vice president of communications, I do think you need two general counsel.
I was going to suggest that.
That was going to be my question.
It doesn't mean that you can't have very significant functions here with the curious employment behind it.
Thank you, Mr. Hurst. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hurst, that question to Northwest employees in my neck of the woods, they've been following this whole merger thing and listening to economists and all the information, the media and so forth, and it doesn't seem like it's going to give that big of a kick, the merger, and so they get concerned that it's mainly for the big cats that are going to come out on this rather than the hardworking employee that Representative Lilly was referencing later. And just following up on that and some of the concerns I heard expressed from some of those folks, how does it work with the board of directors? Is, for example, Mr. Checkey and Mr. Wilson, who were involved, I think, in the 92 financial assistance package, they're on the board of the directors for Delta now. Is that correct? Did I read that?
Mm-hmm. No, sir, it's not. Sir. Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson. No, I know there was a an op-ed in the Star Tribune last Saturday that asserted that Mr. Checkey and Mr. Wilson are on the Delta Board of Directors, but that's not accurate. They are not. They have no continuing connection of any significance with the airline. The merger agreement provides that the board of the two companies will be 13 members. Yes, but there will be 7 appointed by the current Delta board, which will include Mr. Anderson and Daniel Karp, who is the chairman of the Delta board, will be chairman of the new board. There will be 5 members appointed by the Northwest board, and they will include Roy Bostock, who's the current chairman at Northwest. He will become vice chairman, and Mr. Seeland will also be on board. And then there will be one seat occupied by the representatives of the pilot.
Representative Johnson, anything first?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, will Mr. Seeland be able to transfer his restricted stock options to Delta then, and then have them as unrestricted stock options? You know how that works?
Yes, sir, I do. They will vest at the time the deal closes. And at that point in time, a substantial portion of his restricted shares will have already vested, but whatever portion haven't will vest. And then he will then hold shares in the new company and be able to retain them for a period of time or sell them. Their value will be determined by whatever the price of the share that the stock is at the time.
Is it fair to say, Mr. Hurst, that the management, senior management, will benefit in the same proportion as the frontline employees? Or vice versa, that the frontline employees will benefit in the same proportion that the senior management would as a result of this transaction?
It depends on what you mean by benefit, I think. The frontline employees will retain their jobs. That's the commitment. There's no such similar commitment to members of the senior management at Northwest. The management of Northwest, like management at other companies, have employment agreements. They have to varying degrees of stock options and restricted stock. And they will be entitled to a severance payment if they aren't retained as employees. So that's the essence of what they have.
Representative Ellison, Representative Adore, and Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Hirsch, thank you so much for coming down today. Appreciate it. I wanted to go back to what Representative Johnson was talking about, some of the stocks in the newly merged company. Will they be available also to all employees?
I'm sorry, it's Representative, I can't...
I'm way over here. Zeller's at the bottom of the list.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Zeller. As I mentioned earlier, the CEO of Delta has committed to allocating up to 10% of the shares in the new company to the employees of the new company. So all the employees, including all the Northwest employees who... become employees at the new merged entity, will receive stock. And they will receive it at closing, and it's my understanding that they will receive it at closing, and that it will be unrestricted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just one other question, we've been talking about the 1,000 at-risk jobs and being in the PR marketing game. It's usually my people that are some of the first to go, unfortunately, when there's double, and I think there's always need for doubling of that, along with legal counsel, of course.
Now, some of those jobs may be in Atlanta. You know, I think when... not to interrupt.
Go on.
But I think when Richard Anderson was asked that question yesterday at one of the committee hearings, he used that number as an estimate, because I want to emphasize, we haven't done any bottoms-up analysis of what the combination of the two headquarters is going to result in terms of... a job retention and job loss, and one of the things that one of the points Richard made was that to the extent there are redundant positions, there will be losses in Atlanta as well as Minneapolis.
Well, actually, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that was actually the line of my question was that from listening to you, obviously you can hear from Representative Lilly and many of the members of the committee. We're big cheerleaders, and I think given the chance to compete with those folks down in Atlanta, I think our folks up here will actually compete and be better. So that was my question, and just I never believe everything I read in the newspaper, so 1,000 was a number thrown out, but I just wanted to see if there was any kind of either ballparking or a round number, but if there was no such number that come up, just to give you the opportunity to maybe pare it down or up or whatever. But that was my question. If there is some of these redundancies, we shouldn't all assume that they would just automatically go to the Atlanta facility, that some of them may stay up here because we're better at it.
Sir, I couldn't agree more. Sir. And we have a really skilled group of people in Eagan. And I think that assessment is shared by Richard. And he knows because he was CEO of Northwest, and Kathleen knows a lot of it. And I believe he's very sincere in saying that he wants a blended management team at the end of the day.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Zelli. Representative Lador.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My question is going back to the idea of the good neighbor and working together with the community on one issue that's very, not only the job issue in my community, but also airport noise. And we've been working with the MAC. I've been very pleased over the last year how they've reached out to work with their local representatives and their local cities and engaging us more on this conversation. And one of the things that they've stressed to me over this past year is that the Northwest fleet was going to be changing out its older planes and looking at the newer, more fuel-efficient, quieter airplanes. And they're also looking at some navigational equipment and talking with Northwest about that. What I'm wondering is, given Delta's asset base that they're bringing to this merger, will that continue, and what is the age of the Delta fleet, and what were they planning on running out of here?
Mr. Harris.
And then that might be too, maybe that's a better question for Tuesday.
Chairman Atkins and Representative Madour, good question. I think it really goes to one of the advantages that the community will realize from the merger. Because the new airline will be stronger. Again, whatever the economic scenario is that you project out, whether it's rising oil prices, falling oil prices, whatever it is, recession, no recession, the combined company is going to be that much stronger than either company standalone, and therefore much better able to acquire new aircraft. And Northwest has new international aircraft on order that are much quieter than existing aircraft, if Boeing ever gets their act together and delivers them,
mm-hmm.
The 787. Delta has 777s on order from Boeing. We are both in a better position to bring those aircraft into the fleet if we're combined and if we stay separate. Northwest still has a fleet of DC-9 aircraft. They are a workhorse of the fleet. But gradually the numbers are declining. They are older aircraft, still safe, they're still reliable, but they have older engines. We, as a combined airline, will be in a much better position to bring in new 100-seat aircraft than Northwest is on a standalone basis. Delta doesn't have any 100-seat aircraft, so that will be a priority for the airline. That's a very good question. I can't predict exactly what aircraft will come in here, but I think in this regard we'll be better off combined.
Representative Dominguez and then Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a couple questions here and kind of concerns about my frequent flyer stuff here. You mentioned the effects on the fares, that you believe that those fares will not go up no matter what happens. Could you address that a little bit? And the other discussion is I believe a year ago had discussions with MAC on the runway, and they wanted to extend that with Northwest Airlines. Is that still in the discussions with Northwest Airlines or Delta? Is that still happening? Or
Mr. Hirsch?
Or maybe MAC can address.
Chairman and Representative Dominguez.
Right.
Take the last point first. I actually don't know the answer to that. Maybe Kathleen does.
I'm sorry. I am the regional director of airport affairs, and I work with the MAC on a daily basis, and I don't I'm not certain what discussions regarding lengthening the runway you're referring to.
And if I could interrupt, just for the tape, we don't actually have you formally noted on the record yet, so if you could just identify yourself and your position.
Sure. My name is Kathleen Nelson. I work at Northwest Airlines. I'm the Regional Director of Airport Affairs.
Is that an answer, Ms. Nelson, that you're, and I, you're looking like you're about to phone a friend?
Well, I was just looking at the map. I'm not familiar with the reference to extending a runway.
Maybe that's more conversation for Tuesday.
I was going to say, we will have MAC officials here on Tuesday. Well, but in the meantime, if you're able to find it and provide it, we'll...
I'm not aware of any discussions that we've had with the MAC about extending a runway.
Maybe Delta's going to do it. They haven't told... No, I'm... Mr. Hurd.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Domingo, with respect to fares, I can't promise that fares won't rise any more than I can promise that price of oil isn't going to increase. As a result of this merger, fares will not increase. We don't have any projection of fare increases built into our performance with respect to the merger. None of the revenue synergies that we anticipate are based on increasing fares in any market. We believe that we'll have better fare mix in some markets because we'll have a broader network. It's essentially a better product, and it will attract more business travel. And so we think our average fare will go up, but that's really more of a share shift from people from other airlines to us as a result of an improved network. But we see no reason to believe that this merger will have any impact on fares at all because the two airlines don't compete directly. Except on a very small number of markets that they do. The two networks are end-to-end. Having said that, today our fares don't cover our costs. Mm-hmm. And the rapid increase in price of oil has been a devastating event, not only on Northwest Airlines, but on any number of other airlines. We've had five airline bankruptcies in the recent months. And four of those airlines have simply ceased to exist. They've liquidated. United Airlines posted a huge loss on Monday. All the major carriers are reporting losses for the first quarter. And it's all driven by oil and by the fact, and I don't like saying this, but it's true, that existing carriers don't cover those costs.
Thank you, Mr. Hurst. Representative Dominguez, anything else? Otherwise, Representative Tilbury. I'm sure.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of wanted to go back to something that you had said, Chair Atkins, earlier. You had asked a question, something like regarding the frontline people, would they share in same benefits or however that was termed as the higher level positions would earlier on, if you can remember what that was. But you had made the response of, well, they'll have their job. Okay, and that's what you said. And then it triggered a thought that I had. There's a lot of, I think, constituents that would say, well, at least I have my job, although I had to take a huge pay cut. Or, at least I have my job. I'm wondering if the words held harmless kind of fall into that category somewhere along the line.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Silver, I didn't mean to be the cavalier or something about that.
And I didn't take it that way.
Because there will be some people in management who will not have their job. We think that the situation of frontline employees will be improved by this merger because they will have more security behind their jobs, and because in almost every case, Delta's pay rates and benefit levels are improvement over the current rates and current levels at Northwest. So people will move up from that standpoint, and there will, in addition, be a stock grant, which I hope is very valuable to people who receive.
Representative Tilbury, anything else?
No, thanks. I just wanted to clarify that a little bit because sometimes, people have said in that situation, at least I have my job. And that just triggered with me when that came across. And I didn't necessarily take it as cavalier. I just wanted to make sure.
No, if anything, Mr. Harris, you've been very appropriate in your comments. But No one to hide the ball. I think there was a report that if Mr. Steenland laughs out the merger, he's going to get a bonus of like $3.1 million or something in that, along that order. And that the comments that I've gotten, I come from Inver Grove Heights, which isn't too far from where you all are. Have a lot of folks there that, yeah, they'd be thankful to have their jobs, but there's many of them that that work in management there. I asked about the frontline folks because many of the folks that are at the headquarters are already kind of seeing the handwriting on the wall that this may be the end of their ability to work for your fine airline. And so my concern was, you know, if they're going to see the same sort of benefits that, at least on a proportionate basis, that, that some of the top executives might well be seeing. That's a concern that has been pervasive. You made a comment in your opening comments about we have this agreement. You recognize you have an agreement with the state of Minnesota, and you said you got two options in terms of how you can deal with it. One is you can choose to move the headquarters, essentially what I term violate the agreement. You indicated it was some sort of opt-out, and then you have to pay up $245 million. You'd also have the inability to take advantage of the concessions that the MAC gave you, which are about $200 million. But in the event that you opt for that course, that's one possibility. You said, but you indicated, I think, there'd be Delta would like to renegotiate that with the state of Minnesota, and that the terms would be very fair and reasonable. Can you give me some parameters in terms of what you have in mind with respect to those terms?
Let me take a crack at this way, Chairman. I think if I were looking at this from the state's perspective, I would say that what's important here is the hub and employment. And
the hub and, I'm sorry, the hub and what?
And jobs.
Right.
And I think that's what really I heard all the witnesses who preceded me say in one form or another. And I would be very interested in what kind of commitments Delta would be prepared to make with respect to the hub. And I'd be very interested in what kind of commitments Delta would be prepared to make with respect to jobs and operations and facilities here. So I would look at the existing commitments that Northwest has made, and I would think about whether those should be enhanced. And I would talk to Delta about
it. Mr. Hurst, let me try it this way then. You were the one that described it as those terms would be very fair and reasonable. And if you just prefer not to tell me what those terms might be, I can accept that. But it was... You gave me the indication in your opening comments that you might have some sort of crystal ball or some sort of sense as to what those sorts of terms, even a parameter, what that might entail. And if that's not the case, you could just say that and talk to Delta.
It's really not the case.
Okay, then with all due respect, please don't describe them as very fair and reasonable if you don't know or you don't have the capacity to say what they might be, because you're not representing Delta. And I try not to be rude with respect to that, but I don't want people to get a misimpression that as you sit here, you're representing Delta and you're going to say these terms will be very fair and reasonable when you're not here on behalf of Delta.
That's a fair comment, sir, but I would say the reason I use those words is that I understand what Delta's intentions are as a general matter, because I know the people well. And I don't think they intend to simply walk away. I think they want to maintain a significant presence here. I think they're very concerned about the position of Delta in the community. I think Commissioner McElroy discussed the economics of the hub and the importance of the hub to the state, and also the value of the hub here to any airline that might occupy the space. I think the hub at Minneapolis St. Paul was a very important part of the transaction from Delta's perspective. They want to be, I believe, a good citizen here. And they want to maintain the hub. So I don't have any specifics in mind, but I do think that you will reach, if you approach them in good spirits, you'll get a fair and reasonable response.
And that's a fair comment and appreciated. Let me ask you this. There's been some rumblings about a merger for some time now. You indicated in response to Representative Burns' question earlier that if Delta were to be approached with some offer from the state of Minnesota about keeping the headquarters here, keeping the red tail perhaps, that sort of thing, that might not be terribly likely to happen. My question really is, was there an opportunity pre-merger? You know, granted, you could say now is still pre-merger because nobody signed any documents quite yet, but you've announced plans to do this acquisition or merging. Was there an opportunity where the state could have participated in those discussions and perhaps done something like Representative Zellers or Representative Burns has proposed? If that occurred, when did it occur? I'm not hiding the ball. We're about a $500 million investor in Northwest Airlines. And my understanding is that the total price is about $3 billion. The acquisition price is akin to that. I know it fluctuates with the cost of the price of the stock, but that's an awful big stake. And if there wasn't some contact with us about how can we keep Northwest and perhaps be the acquirer of Delta, I'm a little disappointed. So I'm hoping that you can allay those concerns and tell me that, in fact, you were in contact with Commissioner McElroy 15 times and the governor, and you all sat down and talked about how there was some way to possibly keep this in Minnesota. Can you respond to that, please?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I simply don't think that there was ever that opportunity. And so certainly those conversations didn't occur.
And Mr. Hurst, I am pretty disappointed because with the sort of stake that we have in your operation, we got the folks from the MAC over here that got a $200 million in concessions to y'all. We got $245 million of our money that are invested. It would have been nice to have the opportunity to at least have the discussion about how can we keep Northwest here, the headquarters here. I'm just simply disappointed. That's all.
Well, I must say I understand the disappointment, Mr. Chairman. I would like to clarify, though, if I could, from our perspective, how we view the investment, if you will, in Northwest. 1992, MAC issued $270 million of bonds. Proceeds of that bond issue, purchased by private parties, went to Northwest as operating. But Northwest has repaid those bonds, or continues to repay them. We make payments on those bonds directly, as if they were our obligation. In fact, they are. So we have never missed a payment. We pay interest and principal. We paid approximately $350 million in interest on those bonds since they were issued. They're guaranteed by MAC, and we are grateful for that guarantee. But those are obligations of Northwest, and Northwest has consistently met those obligations. There's no state money involved in those bonds. Those are sold to the private market, and Northwest repays them on a regular basis. And we've never missed a payment, including...
Mr. Hurst, who's the guarantor of those bonds?
The MAC is the guarantor of the bonds.
And who backs up the MAC, Mr. Hurst?
The MAC guarantee is backed up by its...
By the property taxpayers of the metropolitan area.
By its taxing power. But it hasn't had to resort to that.
You're right. But whose money are we talking about? You're talking about Minnesotan tax dollars.
Well, actually, we're talking about Northwest Airlines dollars that have paid back every...
Now we are playing lawyers, so forgive us the rest of the members of the committee, but I apologize for interrupting, but I wanted to make sure people knew whose money we're talking about. Final point that I wanted to raise. Can you? And I'm just going to ask you to. And this is the softball one, so you don't need to be tense about it. This is just the crystal ball. If you were, you are, I think, as involved in this as anybody dating back two decades. I'd ask you to, if you could, give us a sense where we'll be 10 years from now. You've got expertise in the airline industry, you've been at the table for all these negotiations, you're obviously very familiar with why and how these entities are being acquired or merged.
if you were sitting in our chairs and you had a constituent ask you, what's this going to look like 5 or 10 years from now, what would you recommend that we tell them?
Well, I can only, Mr. Chairman, give you my view of this. You know, nobody has crystal ball, obviously. First of all, I'll repeat what I said earlier. A, we've entered into this transaction because we believe it's the best thing that we can do for our communities and for our employees. It's been the primary motivation. It's been the main thing that we've talked about internally. We live in a world as an airline that is extremely volatile and dangerous. And our objective has been to put the airline, we used to call it Safe Harbor, now we call it Safer Harbor because you're not really sure how bad things can get. We used to say we're planning for the worst case scenarios. Now we don't use the term worst case because they seem to get worse all the time. But from any point of comparison in the future, whether it's increases in the price of oil, recession, terrorism, whatever impact might hit the airline, we believe that we are better off as a combined airline than as two standalone. There's a margin of security that will result from combining these airlines that's simply not there if we don't combine them. And so I would say if you look ahead 5 or 10 years, Minnesota will be better off because of this merger, just as Minnesota is better off today because of the merger between Republic and Northwest. As I said in my prepared remarks, we all firmly believe in the business that there would not be a Northwest Airlines without that merger, because what happened was you tied the Northwest International system to a domestic route system and you provided traffic support for those international routes. What the Delta-Northwest merger does is to create a worldwide network. It completes the network of Delta and it completes the network of Northwest, in effect, by creating a network or a route system that is in all parts of the world and in virtually all parts of the United States. So that if you look at Minneapolis' system from that perspective, behind the international routes we now have to Asia and Europe, you will have this huge domestic network of Delta in the south providing traffic support for those routes. So what I would expect, if I had to predict anything, is that in 5 to 10 years, Delta will be here, will be providing service here, will be providing expanded service on most routes, and Minnesota will look back and say this was a good decision. But I'd have to say again, I don't have a crystal ball.
Fair enough. And I promised folks when they asked how late this would go that it would be done sometime between 3:30 and 4 o'clock. It's almost exactly in between. Representative Zellers has a question or comment. Or
15 seconds is what you're saying, Mr. Chairman.
Well,
the clock 13
now.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the first thing was just there's an editorial here from some folks that went out to D.C. It was referenced they were going to be out in D.C. talking to the powdered wigs in Washington, so I figured I'd offer that up to the committee members. But God bless you. When you lawyers get talking, now I'm confused, Mr. Chairman.
Stop listening.
probably wouldn't cost us as much. The 245, confirmed as representative deal for us, so we heard the number 212 and then $0.5 billion. These bonds, help me the understanding now. Say you do pay back the bond. Is the 212 or 245 or whatever the actual number is it going to go to the bondholders, to the MAC, or to
right.
the state?
It would go to the bondholders.
And this, even though we're actually, Representative Zellers, we're talking, there's two different things, because there's $245 million that is owed on those bonds, and then I referenced, that's where the $0.5 billion came from, I referenced an agreement worth about $200 million with respect to ongoing prospective concessions that Northwest and MAC has with regard to a separate agreement that also requires you to keep a hub and headquarters here. I don't believe there's the same job requirement. So you combine those two, you're talking roughly about $0.5 billion investment. That's where the figures came from in my part.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Hurst, absolutely.
To that $0.5 billion. The concessions that Northwest and the MAC agreed to, in effect, take the concession revenues, or some of the concession revenues that the MAC generates, and applies them to reduce the airline's costs, and it's not just Northwest, but it's all the airlines at the airport, to reduce their costs at the airport. And the effect of that reduction was to bring the cost per enplanement at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport in line with cost per enplanement at Detroit, for example. And the mechanism by which that was done, which is applying concession revenues, parking from the parking lot, rental cars, and so on, to the airline cost base, it is not an uncommon mechanism that is applied generally by airports elsewhere. It's called a residual financing arrangement. And it's the mechanism that, for example, Detroit Metro follows. So the Northwest facility at Detroit is fully residual, and there's no comment or debate about it, and that's not viewed as a concession. It's viewed as simply doing business in a way that enhances the ability of the airline to serve the airport. And I think that what actually happened there, regardless of any covenants, was in the interest of the airport and the interest of the community, because it equalized incentives at Northwest for service in here versus service in Detroit.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, and thank you for. I was told there'd be no math in commerce, Mr. Chair. So I was just so to be clear. Then, Mr. Hurst, the whatever the bond payback isn't may go back to. It's not like we're going to see a big check hit the MAC bank account or the state's bank account, especially for other little problem over here with our nearly $1 billion budget deficit. I don't want somebody scraping around the cushions and magically finding 200 or thinking that it's going to be $250 million or $212 million that we're going to all of a sudden find in the state's bank account.
No, we wish it were so, but it's not.
Yeah, well, we do too. But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Zeller. Is there anyone else that has anything burning? All right. Otherwise, we will be back Tuesday morning. I think we're set for 10 a.m. We've got a number of good folks scheduled to testify. The final comment, Mr. Hurst, the two things lingering or hanging over us, documents and Delta. If you would be so kind as to provide us some help. You referenced the documents are coming that we requested, and your contact with Delta would be much appreciated.
Happy to do that.
Thank you.
Now, on the document side, sir, the...
Well, this is we got... Everybody stand. This is really cool. Have you ever seen this happen? All right, everybody freeze. Mr. Hurst has a final comment.
I apologize. I just wanted to be clear. There were several requests. Some of them cover documents that are not in existence. Some of them cover documents that may be privileged or confidential in certain ways. There was a request for documents reflecting the terms of the merger, and the best source of that is the merger agreement itself, and some of the public statements that have been made, and reflecting the public statements, and we'll make the merger agreement available to you, and I think that's Monday. And as to the others, we're happy to talk to you about how to get you what you need and comply as best we can.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Hurst. We'll appreciate your response. For folks, again, we'll see you Tuesday. Have a good weekend. Thank you all very much. We stand adjourned.